Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Tina Horn, and you're listening to Why Are People Into That? The podcast for queers, sluts, perverts, whores, and everyone who loves us. This January, the Pleasure Chest is highlighting all the ways you can expand your pleasure in 2020. They'll be sharing their sex specialist secrets to help you prioritize your pleasure in the new decade and beyond. They're also getting started on Valentine's Day early. You can save 20% on their most popular sex toys that are designed with couples in mind. That's January 14th through January 20th, online only at PleasureChest.com. While you're visiting PleasureChest.com, check out their curated couples kits, available right up until February 14th. But wait, there's more. From January 17th to February 11th, you can get a free WeVibe toy bag with all WeVibe toy purchases. Use code WEVIBEGWP online or visit a Pleasure Chest store in New York City, LA, or Chicago. Now, don't forget to follow at Pleasure Chest Stores on Instagram and Twitter for up-to-the-minute info on these deals and much more from the sex-positive community icon. All right, and now, on with the show. Hello, and welcome to Why Are People Into That? Live at the Pleasure Chest in New York City.
It's a good crowd. It's a good crowd.
It's a really good crowd. Absolutely. We know where they're all coming from, yeah, too, great. Thanks to you.
Yeah. New York.
I'm Tina Horn, and Why Are People Into That is my slutty, kinky, queer, perverted as fuck sexuality podcast. I've been producing and hosting Why Are People Into That 100% independently for over 5 years now. My God, it is actually almost 6 years. And in the past couple of years, I've been recording some episodes live in front of a studio audience, often at the sex-positive sex toy retailer, The Pleasure Chest. And the main difference between the regular Why Are People Into That pod and the live show is that instead of choosing one sexuality topic, we cover a whole spectrum. And usually I have a special rock star sex expert. I don't like the term sexpert, for the record. I'm a fan of most portmanteaus, but I find sexpert to be like a really obnoxious portmanteau. Least favorite portmanteau of all time, sexpert. It's raining, we're PMSing, it's just a whole deal. Anyway,
oh my God.
So our cycles aren't synced up yet, but I feel like maybe in the next hour it might happen.
Yeah, when you bitch enough about the same thing.
Kvetching, exactly.
Mesh.
Like that mesh bodysuit, yeah, I tried on earlier that did not fit.
It was almost there.
It was almost. The cannabis leaves weren't covering my nipples. Anyway, but it's just going to be me and Maddox, and when I say... just, I feel like we have enough opinions and personality to fill this damn basement. So, I think it's gonna be great.
Yeah, I'm tired today. That's what I am.
I know we are both. So we're both so tired, but you know what? This is us tired.
Yeah. So imagine.
It's pretty fucking energized and a little neurotic. So I'm gonna tell you a little bit about Maddox, who you've already heard from a little bit. Amazon. Maddox, what is Amazon? What part of your identity is that a part of your name, or is that like your designation, your honorific?
Yeah, it's more like my honorific.
Awesome.
It fit, and I didn't want to be mistress or goddess, or I mean, I'm cool with being called that. And Maddox is, you could also call me Maddox, but Amazon Maddox is my preferred honorific, is my stage name, my performance name, you know.
I love it. I really love it. Yeah, Amazon is an alternative to mistresses or masters, really. It's really great.
Yeah,
I love
cool.
it.
Thank you, man.
So Amazon Maddox, aka Bruja Pussy with an X instead of a U. Mm-hmm. Do you still pronounce it Pussy?
I
have so many questions about your bio. Every word of your bio, I have questions.
Of course, please. I would love to answer. There's an X because I'm gender fluid.
Hell yeah.
So yeah.
Also probably helps with being
the
shadow
censorship.
Banned.
Yeah.
It's censorship.
Bullshit.
Yeah. It's totally bullshit. But I like how you've turned the censorship into an affirmation of your gender.
Trying, man.
Fuck yeah.
Fucking stick it to the man somehow.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, I'm going to start from the beginning.
Okay. Here we go.
Amazon Maddox, aka Bruja Pussy, is an Afro-Latinx gender-fluid New Yorker. Through their work as a dominant life coach and guide, they strive to make BDSM and alternative lifestyles more of a well-represented community for marginalized groups, as well as make meaningful connections with those they encounter on their own journey into self-discovery, pleasure, and healing. Parent, activist, former New York City bike messenger. Also, we need to talk about that. There is not much they can't handle. I can testify this is true. Maddox's pronouns are she/they/mama daddy, which I fucking love. Maddox, will you? No, I feel it's important to be. I like talking about money and being transparent about money. So I feel it's important for me to be transparent that I do pay my guests when we do the live show. Yeah. And you can choose to either get a check or to get credit for the pleasure chest. Maddox chose credit.
I did.
And immediately spent it.
Immediately.
So yes. Tell us what you transformed. The labor you're doing right now, you got paid up front.
Yes.
Like you should.
Like I should.
And
thank
then
you.
The labor you're doing right now has already been transformed into a good and or service.
Yeah.
And so what,
I mean,
what have
absolutely.
You got?
So, okay. I was ready to spend this stuff, like this this voucher on stuff for work, you know, because I'm always like stuff for work, you know, or other people, like my partners, you know, people I play with or my primary partner. And this time I'm like, we were perusing, you know, up and down the aisle the last hour. And I'm like, you know what? I've been wanting something remote controlled for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And the only real vibrator I have is that good old Hitachi.
Which, you know.
It's a good old Hitachi, you know.
It's classic.
It's classic. And the wall one, not the rechargeable one, the one to the wall.
Mine.
I don't want to be upset and find it like, you know. But this but this is this new one I got here is the Wee Vibe, the Moxie Wee Vibe. So it's a wearable clitoral vibrator.
Oh, it's wearable.
It's wearable.
It's fashion.
It's through denim, you know, like they've tried wow. leather. Yeah, so I was impressed, and it's very strong, rechargeable, remote controlled apps for both type of operating systems. So I'm really excited about that shit. I have a date night with my boo soon, so we're gonna have some fun with it.
I am so excited for you. I haven't even seen that one yet, and it looks
it's adorable. I think it's adorable,
cute, and yeah. powerful.
It's pretty powerful,
like you.
Yay,
it's perfect. Yeah. Cool. So that's what. Oh, and the over oh, there. But
and it comes
with
more stuff. But there's more. So I got the little cute little gift box here. It's a little cute little present since it's the holidays. It comes with massage oil. This looks like silicone based lube.
Hell
to
yeah.
Me. Hell yeah. And pretty little satin ties. I mean, I'm like you know for like binding and stuff like pretty little handcuffs. I'm not into that, but I have a lot of people who are into. I'm really like. I like leather and shackles and chains, but I have really high femmes in my life who are like Penny. I actually just did a soft bondage scene at the Goddess Loft 2 weeks ago. It was yarn bondage, like yarn, you know, and cuffs made of satin ties by Knox, Mox, one of those companies. But yeah, it was like it was interesting. It was interesting.
That's cool. I mean, I love hearing you talk about. The difference in textiles
yeah.
in your scenes and mm-hmm. thinking about how different textiles create different restraint experiences. Yeah. And it might have to do with having a fetish for that material, but it also can have to do with like what, well, it could definitely be about gender.
Yeah.
Like maybe you want a softer scene as opposed to a heavier scene. Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily need to correspond to femininity or masculinity, but it's right. an element to play with.
Yeah, absolutely. And some Leather, latex are the biggest, like, I guess maybe nylon is also lace. You know, those are like the mainstream material fetish that we hear of, you know? Yeah. And most of the materials that I know I've used in work and play has been those. Rope, of course, as well, in terms of restraint. And I know, like, maybe even someone seeing, like, a really experienced heavy player would see a pair of satin ribbons attached with a little O-ring, and they're like, you know, like, that's bullshit. What is that? I could get out of that in a second. Sure, you can. I'm sure. But that's not really the point. You know, and some people on the opposite spectrum would see big, heavy leather shackles with, like, locking
rings. And feel, like, intimidated or scary.
Yeah. Like, it's too hardcore or whatever for them. So it's good to have options, I feel. You know?
Yeah, but it's also... Well, first of all, something that I like about what you're saying is that you know what your preferences are. Yeah. But then as a provider, you get to have experiences with things that are maybe not to your taste and learn what their pros and cons are, and it's not just about your taste, your style, your preferences, your desire. It's about exploring and experimenting with different things and also thinking, like, meeting people where they're at.
Yeah.
That's a really cool thing about being a sex worker.
Yeah.
In any capacity.
Absolutely. I agree. And something I like to advertise is, especially like newbies or people who will have the wrong idea of BDSM, kink fetish, what have you, of the work that, you know, I specifically do, I like to show them that, you know, there's those cliches or those archetypes or what have you that we kind of have to let go of, especially nowadays, you know, the new generation, you know, we're kind of taking shit, you know, we ain't taking shit and we're taking our shit and we're doing it our way,
yes.
Which is great. You know, I think it's fantastic. Also, it's really important to, as a provider, to be open. You know, I've come from an educational background. My mother was a teacher for so many years. I just have always wanted to, like, either help people or guide people or teach people. So that education that you could provide, as well as the services and the skills that I have, are equally, if not more, important, you know, especially nowadays.
Totally. That thing that you said about people being like, well, once you're experienced, you don't want the soft stuff anymore. And I think that that's a total fallacy.
I mean, yeah, there's going to be elitist. So, you know,
it's very, yeah, it's very elitist. And I feel, yeah, and it's very
snobby.
I also feel like it's very, like, patriarchal and colonialist, yeah. You know, it's, yeah, like bigger, but yeah, very classist.
Yeah, I could see that. Cause I mean, not all of us can afford, I knew when I first started, I couldn't afford anything leather, it's real leather, you know? So things like regular old cotton rope, like clothesline from the discount store that you cut up into length, you know, that worked for a while, you know, until you grow and you kind of, like, become into your own self, which has been it's been a hell of a journey, but, you know, I know I'm not done, definitely. And I don't want to be done.
You're definitely not.
Yeah, if you're not learning, then you're dead. You know, that's how my mom said that. So I kind of, like, live by that.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of mom/parents, one of the things that you wanted to talk about today was being a parent, and specifically being a parent who is kinky and poly, or maybe not specifically yourself, but just, like, the concept of parenting while being a part of or identifying with sexual subcultures.
Yeah, because it exists.
It totally exists. So what are some of the, like, wonderful things about that, and also maybe some of the trials and tribulations?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. A lot of people who are, like, I'm talking about sex workers specific, like, a lot of them are parents, whether you know about it or not. You know, I know a lot of hardworking mamas and daddies who are outside the role play, are doing their thing, who are trying to either, like, I feel like I'm the only one who's kind of, like, out loud about being a parent, which comes with, you know, its own hotbed of issues. But
maybe let's start there, because I feel like you are one of the only people who I've seen who's social media, something that I'm really obsessed with is the way that people are starting to integrate different parts of their personalities into their social media personas. Yeah. I've talked about this a lot, that like when I got started as a sex worker, there was no social media, or there was like Friendster. Just dated myself.
Yeah. And, yeah, I remember that shit.
And the way that I was educated and trained and turned out was very much like, people don't, like, clients don't have access to you when they're not booking your time.
Right.
Which really was great for me. And then I eventually like got on social media like as Tina Horn, as this character persona, but then I felt like more and more demands every year on like how much of myself I put into that character that's represented on that social media. Mm-hmm. And I see other sex workers, you know, posting about their real life partners, or posting about their real life pets, or posting in their real life homes, or posting from their vacations,
yeah.
You know, and I'm not going to be a fucking concern troll about it. Like, they're making those choices about how they're integrating those things. And I think that the obvious benefit is clients and the world at large seeing us as human beings.
Exactly.
Like, what a fucking concept. But so you are one of the only, but I feel like there is a sort of a final taboo of a lot of sex workers not including their, like, their parents or their children, like that level of family life. And you, and also, you know, Maxine Holloway and some folks that I know are starting to like bring their parenthood into the same place that they're advertising their services. Yeah. So I'm wondering, how did you come to integrate those things?
So before I was Bruja Pussy, I was the Chubby Cruiser on Instagram. That was me. The Chubby Cruiser. Because I was like the only fat girl on a bike for quite a few years. Let's see, the baby's 4 now. I was bike messenger for like 3-4 years before that. So
That is gnarly.
Yeah, it's some shit, man. Let me tell you, it's some shit.
It's hot. It's really fucking hot.
I honestly, besides when I'm Maddox, you know, being on my bike was when I felt like I'm the biggest, baddest bitch in the world. My bike didn't have any brakes because I was like, fixie life, you know, bike messenger type shit. I don't need no helmet. Look, I did a lot of stupid things, but I'm
glad
alive.
Your yeah. head is still intact.
It's still here. I still love, it's there. Now the helmet's just huge and fluffy. But so I was very ingrained. I was Chubby Cruiser for a long time. When my kid was about 1.5, I saw the Viceland episode with Mistress Lucy Sweetkill,
oh, yeah.
and Mistress Couple. I remember, and then it just brought me back. I'm like, oh shit, man, dominatrixes are still around, you know? Because when I was 18, I'm gonna be 33 next month, but when I was 18, just to give you perspective of how long ago it was, 18, my father passed. I got really close to my downstairs neighbor. We were cooking together. That was something me and my dad liked to do. She lost her dad around the same time. We just got closer. You know, she was always dope. So dope. I don't know how, but she was a pro dom. We just came out. She was a pro dom. I think I saw something in her house that I recognized because I was an alternative kid.
Mm.
You know, I was like punk goth rock. Yeah.
Well, you were like, oh yeah, I bought that at Hot Topic.
Yeah, I was probably at Spencer's or something.
Oh my God, Spencer's.
I believe that was where my first sex toy was from. Right, I feel right. Like, yeah, that was
they get the job done.
It gets the job done, and at the time, and then you learn. Anyway, yeah.
And then you get paid
vibrators that have apps. That's amazing, and you can wear on your jeans. It's fucking amazing. 2020, y'all. It's gonna be a big year. Anyway,
this is your glow up.
This is the glow up, y'all. This is it. You drop that dead weight. You know, you cut off that toxic shit in your life, and just
like literally, like toxic sex toys that they sell at Spencer's Gifts.
And those as well. Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
that's what we should really talk about.
I don't mean to interrupt, but it was. This has come up twice now, and like I was thinking about what you were saying about the like classist bias of. Like, oh, well, you're not like really kinky, or you're not really queer, you're not really a sex worker, you're not
really
a pervert, you're not really any of these things.
Yeah.
You're not a super slut, like, unless you have like all this fancy, expensive gear. And so then you use like stuff from the dollar store, which is like maybe actually like not as safe, you know, or like sensual or nice or durable as stuff that you can buy at the pleasure chest. And the same with the like shitty toxic vibrator that actually is like probably going to give you UTI.
Yeah.
So this toy that you got is like worth the investment, but not everybody can like literally can afford to make that investment. And I don't know. I guess.
No, it should, because pleasure is like, pleasure is a privilege, right? It feels that very much
it
that way.
It shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be, but it feels that way. I guess maybe because capitalism.
That is probably
capitalism.
it's definitely to blame.
But you know, you learn at some point, you know, like we all have bought that cheap shit and we all regret it at some point, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So you're shedding the toxic.
I shed that toxic shit and you know, the glow up is real. And now I have a remote control vibrator sitting right
next to me.
Neighbor was a dominatrix. She had these freaking boots, these thigh-high boots. I should have guessed, right? Because one time, I guess she came back from her vanilla job. Who knows? But she had these red thigh-high boots, custom-made from London. And I'm like, 10, 11 years old. And I'm like, and I love heels. I'm a heel boot fetish. I'm a bitch. I'm a boot bitch, for real. And I was just obsessed. And you know, I'm like, I should have figured it out. I should have, like, you were a dominatrix. I should have figured it out.
I mean, we don't have enough education about.
We don't, especially back then.
Yeah.
And I was a kid. Also came from a kind of like a shelter. They tried to like, my parents saw how I was going to be. You know, they saw.
It would actually be nice to make a little like anthology or some little piece about, I know so many pro-doms who have that memory of like, oh, and I knew that I like, wanted to bask in her glory and be her and be around her. And then later I figured out that she was a dominatrix and I was like, well, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, makes sense. It does. And that's exactly how I felt with my downstairs neighbor. I miss you, girl. Mistress Leslie Savage. That's what she went by. She disappeared. Like most dominatrixes from the olden days, you know, they do their thing. They pack up shop and you never hear from him again. You never see
If you're listening.
Well, if you're listening. Yeah, girl. Every time I'm on something, I'm like, girl, find me. Anyway, I don't remember the play party she brought me to. I was 18. Okay. Very turbulent time. Between then
was in New York?
That was in Queens.
Born and raised
in Queens.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah, man. I miss her. It was a lot of fun. But that was my gateway, you know? Well, that was my gateway physically. I remember many things coming to me as a youngster. I'd be like, I like that. You know, like leather, or like boots. Or
what
like
a beautiful thing a to whip. Have that, to have that mentorship and that guidance of somebody that you trusted to take you to your first play party.
I wish I could remember, but I knew it was like, oh, I like watching. I'm a big ass voyeur. So like, I love watching. I remember that.
Yeah.
I'm like, I also love watching her do her thing. I'm like, yeah. You know, I could definitely do
so
that.
How long before you started doing that thing?
Yeah, so I've been a pro dom for going on 2 years in March, April.
And you've been like kinky in your personal life.
Oh yeah, for a long time. Remember when Ursula did this?
I sure do.
I was very much into that. And now I have a like an art piece of the Ursula's a dominatrix on my wall.
Oh my God, I love that.
I know, she was very much a very big influence.
Ursula has this thing. She's where like her body is also her outfit. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's hot.
It's hot.
It's hot.
In
she's
Ursula's
a tube
case.
Top.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like a tube dress. Yeah. Bustier thing. Yeah. 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 And it's like shiny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's just a badass bitch.
Yeah. Of course.
We love her.
Absolutely.
We love her. Well, shortly after my dad died, I kind of like, you know, family life was like in a downward spiral. My mom and my brother were left. I ran away, but she gave me the option. If you don't like it, leave. So I fucking left. Cause you don't give me the option. I'll take it. And, my coworker at the time, she found the place in Jamaica, Queens, and she was an ex stripper, from back in the day. And it's safe to say when you're an ex stripper from back in the day, you were also, a full service worker at some point. And she was, and she kind of taught me some things, especially I was young, I was like 19, 20. So she taught me that if you're good at something, don't do it for free. Take what you can. Closed mouths don't get fed. Things like that. Things I was not used to because only recently I have become so open about asking for for what I need and what I think I deserve since becoming a mom. I know it's cliche, but that really taught me how to. You have to at some point, right? So she taught me that, you know, she's still a very strong person. Don't take no shit, been through a lot, you know. So I remember going to a club with her one day and like charging guys $2 for a dance and stuff, things like that. I didn't do much other than that because I was like, yeah. Later on, I mean, I say escorting, but that's just to pad it up, you know, that's just to soften the blow, you know. Really, I just followed some piece of shit around for like a summer and I'm like, no, this is not what I want to do. I know I want to use my wiles. My wiles, my sexuality for things. Not necessarily to get what I want, but you know, I like getting what I want, but you know,
also to like survive, make ends meet.
Also because growing up as a fat brown girl, I was basically taught that I didn't deserve to feel good. You know, I didn't deserve pleasure. No one was gonna wanna be with me because I was of size and whatever the fuck else I was, you know? So I very
and
much...
And then you realized that was fucking wrong.
I was fucking wrong. And now I'm here to say that that's fucking wrong. Anyone out there thinking that because they're too big, fat, and people have made them feel like they don't deserve this, they don't deserve to feel good or have a fucking orgasm, it's bullshit. Fuck that person.
Fuck that.
Drop that. Don't fuck that person, actually. No, drop
no,
them.
Fuck that, no, fuck that don't, whole...
Fuck that whole noise. Idea. Fuck that noise.
Yeah.
Don't fuck that person with the noise. But... toss it to the side and just make yourself feel good. It starts with yourself because I had to learn that too. You know, I tried to like get gratification through other people, use sex with other people to like feel good or like gain power because sex is very much a power exchange, no matter if it's between two lovers, people, you know, it's still an energy exchange, you know? So after that shit and, you know, getting with my partner, fast forward, we're like, 9 years married and 14 years together in total. He's my biggest supporter. He just got his ass beat for his birthday in September by like 4 doms at Euphoria's party. He's the best. Yeah, yeah, I know.
So lucky.
I am. I'm very lucky.
No, he's lucky.
Oh, true. that too. Yeah. So.
What? So okay. I love all of this. And I want to get back to what made you decide, because you said that you wanted to talk about this.
Yes.
What made you decide that you felt comfortable using the same platform? You were talking about being the chubby cruiser.
Yeah, that was me.
Bike messenger.
Yeah.
And then you had your kiddo.
I had my kiddo.
And
I saw the Viceland episode.
And you decided to go pro.
Just say, fuck it, let me try, you know.
And... Yeah. And so was there any point where you felt like you wanted to separate your personal life from your marketing persona?
So at first it was, I kind of like eased everybody into it. I changed my name and that made people go like, what the fuck, who are you? Anyway, but like before I ventured into sex work, I worked on a lot of my spirituality. Postpartum depression hit me very, very hard. I had a great pregnancy. All right. So anybody out there say that fat people can have healthy pregnancies, fuck you. Okay.
Fuck
9.5 baby, fuck that noise. So working on my spirituality, and not just the light work, not just the positive shit, but the shadow work, which is very important. I feel like it's maybe even more important than the light work because you can't, because that false light, you know, that false positivity without burying deep and getting to that root of the problem.
Wait, how do you tell the difference between false light and real light? I need to know.
I mean, well, first of all, if you're like intuitive, I feel like, you know, you can feel it. But someone who's like, you know, toxic positivity, you know, we've heard of that.
What can you give me an example?
Yeah, so I'm going through a depressive episode and someone says, oh, go to the gym, just get that endorphins going. No, yeah, cool. That's not going to fix my depression, though. That's not going to fix the fact that I feel like I'm worthless. Sometimes to the point where I want to hurt myself, you know? So all that, you'll get over it, all that it's okay, all posting just positive memes and shit like that without even, like, acknowledging that it's shitty. Life is very shitty at times. It's all about a balance, you know? That too much good, you know, it doesn't work. And
so it's about balance,
balance.
And that's how you can tell when something is phony, is when it's like going so far
tipping the scale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then not acknowledging the shadow side.
And then not acknowledging the shadow side, because it's important too. You have to say things you don't like. You have to hear things that you rather not hear. You have to face those things that you rather not face to get over to the other side and to really feel like you're, like you kind of surpassed that time in your life, that piece of your life that was, you felt like you probably couldn't, you know, that was just me a couple months ago, you know. Yeah. I mean, it happens, it comes and goes, you know, up and down. But again, having a kid has, I was a control freak, you know, so it's like, taught me to let go of the idea of control, because control is an idea, is not real, you know. It's kind of what we make control, you know, like in our mind.
So did you realize that trying to control the different sides of you in how you represented yourself online was just never going to work, and you decided to just integrate it? Did you like make a decision, or were you just like,
I think it just happened organically, to be honest.
It's amazing.
The more comfortable I got with being truthful with what I was into, with who I am and who I want to be, a friend of mine told me, you will definitely, people will see you better if you're transparent. You know, it sounds funny, but it's, if you're clear and transparent, people will see you better and probably receive you better. And, you know, yeah, definitely. I could definitely, people have ultimately received my, I guess, coming out, you know, for like the fourth time.
So many things to be out about.
So many things to be out about.
Do you have advice for parents who are trying to figure out how to navigate biases and stigma and just fucking bullshit noise about not being able to be publicly sexual while parenting? And also, why
does it even happen?
Why? Yeah,
I mean, yeah, it's funny because, like, I obviously had a lot of fun making the kid, you know? Like, I'm not going to, what, I'm supposed to stop having fun after the kid's here? It's harder to have fun when the kid's here. But honestly, and I'm still working through this, so my best advice, because my kid's just 4 years old, he's still pretty young, I guess my advice will go more towards mothers and maternal, feminine caregivers, what have you. Because we're basically taught, forced, that we're a mother now, and we're like this saintly, pure figure after having a baby, after getting nutted in by a man, okay? We are apparently right after, we're supposed to be like Virgin Marys and shit like that. We can't talk about sex. We can't be wearing sexy things in front of the kids. Okay, I firmly agree that there's some things that you should not be doing in front of your kids. You should keep away from your kids until they're old enough. But as far as still having a sex life and being a parent, it takes work.
But see, this is the thing that is such bullshit, is like the idea that people wouldn't have the common sense to have good boundaries and to understand what is appropriate to share. And that also, it to a certain degree is up to individuals to decide, right? Like, if a family feels like they're all comfortable being buck naked, like in the house together, then you also like have a conversation with the kid about, like, just so you know, different families and different households have different standards. Also, like, outside world, like, has different standards about when we have to wear clothes. But inside our house, you know, and these are just like basic principles that also apply to things other than nudity. Like, there are different values in homes and families than other homes and families and in the general world, and bodies and sexuality is just a part of that. And like, also understanding the difference between like being naked around your kid versus being sexual around your kid.
Because nudity is not inherently sexual.
No. Exactly.
You know, so we're taught that. Also, communication is like the biggest factor in that, right? Like, if you don't talk to your kids about things, they're not gonna know, or they're gonna learn from a different source. I'd rather have the control over what I teach my kids, you know, like how I teach them, you know, especially since things like sex ed in the school system is bullshit. So
fuck that noise too.
Fuck that noise. DOE, I'm looking at you. Oh man. It's a shame that we have to have these conversations because of, I don't know, prudish colonial constructs.
Definitely.
That's definitely
to blame.
I mean, and it's ridiculous because Europeans are fucking, whoa. You know, a lot of Euros, I know, they're like, y'all are great. You know, they're crazy. I love them. yeah, and it's...
Sorry,
it's
about our ancestors.
Sorry, guys.
Mine.
Well,
yeah,
I mean,
European.
Well, you know, I'm not you specifically.
No, no, please. I'm. Yeah.
You're great. You're making up for all those prude, Puritan bullshits.
You know, like, yeah. All those Norwegian and Romanian prudes. I'm doing my best.
You're doing your best.
Yeah.
And that's all we can ask for. And that's something else that I've learned as a mother. Do your best. That's all you could. That's all you could do. And being a parent and being a sex worker, a polyamorous person, pretty liberated person, boundaries are, you know, that's also something I've learned to really enforce, you know, through this work and after being a parent, because your time becomes more precious. I don't know how to really... You're split up a lot, you know, like I'm split up a lot between family life, being a mother, being a partner to my primary partner, but also to my other partners, and then my submissives and the clients that I see. And it's like so many ways I'm split. And
sounds like you're giving a lot.
I give a lot because that's just kind of how
so
I
where
am.
Do you get where do you get from?
So I get from, you know, my support team, which includes my primary partner,
awesome,
their partners, friends, my awesome friends, and my family members, like my brother, my cousin are like my biggest supporters. So that's really awesome.
This new vibrator seems like it might.
This is gonna
be a giver,
give
and
me
not a taker.
So much. It's gonna be great. I'm gonna be so tired. it's gonna be great. So I also, when I feel like a burnout's coming, which my next break is in January, by the way. So if y'all want to see me, make sure it's before January 13th. That's my birthday. I feel reciprocated when I'm doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I see that, I guess my family is happy. When I have a good session and my clients like, oh, like they pushed it out, they pushed the threshold that they couldn't, or they try something new and they thought they didn't like and they liked it, or we just kind of like broke into the next something that like it makes me feel gratified with my work.
That feeds you.
That feeds me.
Cool.
Also giving like pleasure feeds me. Like I like making my people feel good. You know, whether it's through like orgasms or like a really good meal or like, I don't know, like rolling two blunts and something and smoke them to the face together. You know, like, I don't know. Like,
sounds great.
Sounds great, right?
I feel better already.
Oh, awesome. I'm so glad I could help. And you know me, I'm always bringing weed with me everywhere. So,
that's true.
Yeah. Canadom, I definitely am.
Well, unfortunately, that mesh bodysuit with
that
cannabis
damn
leaves over the nipples did not fit me, so I can't.
Here is a note for fucking clothing designers, right?
Oh, yeah. Wait, actually, this is a good transition because the other thing that you wanted to talk about was being a fat sex worker.
Yeah, so this is a great segue into that. So those leaves need to be bigger because not everyone has tiny ass nipples like this or what have you, all right? Like,
listen, all of the cannabis leaves need to be bigger,
big.
Whether they're covering our nipples or we're smoking them to our dome.
Yeah. Or I don't know, but they're in general, they're pretty
bigger.
Big. So, oh my goodness, being a fast sex worker, man, let me tell you. First of all, we were just talking about that mesh bodysuit, that we have to consider the things we buy a lot more than our smaller compatriots.
Or that just like literally doesn't, like you see a look.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I would like to do that look, but it has not been made and I can't afford to have someone custom make it for me.
That's true, because it's fucking expensive for custom, especially fetish shit, you know? Like,
I tell you, man, Rihanna's lingerie line, the ads make me actually cry because I like when I started as a sex worker, you know, I was 24. There's like a little bit more Tina Horn like being carried around now than there was then, but I was like always
Tootsies.
And I didn't own, when I was getting started, I did not own any lingerie. I did not own any lacy panties. I had never worn high heels in my entire life. And so all of my exploration of that like feminine glamour was always for the purpose of sex work. And like, you know, listen, everything that I bought looked great on me, but, and I made a ton of money, so I was obviously like doing a lot right. But like when you don't see like in the on the packages, in the ads of even the things that you're buying that end up looking good on you, and then you don't, you know, you don't see them in Vogue and editorials, and you don't see celebrities who are looking that way, and you're just like, oh well, the way that this lingerie looks on me is like this weird way that it looks on my body, which is apparently marketable and great, you know. But then to see these like lingerie sets on the models for Savage Fenty, right? I'm like, oh, that's how a garter belt looks on my ass. And I'm seeing it on this like beautiful, glamorous model who was paid way more than I've ever been paid to wear lingerie. And I just, it really, it, you know, representation matters.
It really does.
Makes me, you know, it makes me feel beautiful. And by the way, it makes me want to buy the
exactly which is why I don't understand what clothing lines only go up to like a certain size. Y'all could be making so much more money if you extended your size and marketed to everyone. Like, you're idiots. Anyway,
yeah, the one thing that people love more than money is controlling how much we all hate ourselves.
True. That's a good point. Absolutely.
When was the first time that you saw imagery, like sexy imagery that you saw yourself in?
This is a good question.
Have you ever?
Yeah, no, especially now. And I was a Tumblr kid, so I was lucky enough to, like, you know, y'all that's remember another, Tumblr.
That, well, that's another thing that is a fucking shame about porn not being allowed on Tumblr anymore is that the internet is fucking Cestafosta. And every, you know, everything around, I mean, Tumblr didn't shut down specifically because of Fosta Sesta, but because of the everything that is going on or around it, this sort of like groundswell of of shutting down sex online. It's for real, guys. It's really scary.
It's really happening.
Tumblr is not perfect,
no,
but it was often a place where
you see fat bodies,
diversity of bodies, diversity of races, diversity of kinds of sexual identities, you know, because people were sharing it with one another, and it wasn't necessarily being like controlled and dictated and marketed by corporate interests.
Yeah, and that's what really got me into like, because I've always wanted to do modeling. I've always wanted to do things like that, and really, I remember Tumblr, Virgie Trevor.
Oh yes.
Yeah, Hot and Heavy. I still go back and read that book all the time. I really love that was one of
Virgie's
the first
great.
She's great. That was one of the first, and she was like, she's brown too, you know.
Her latest book is You Have the Right to Remain Fat.
Yeah, true. And I want to see her speak. She's a very good speaker.
Yeah, totally.
She was one of the first ones. I remember also Tess Holliday being one of the ones, but back in the day when she was on Tumblr, she was like sick for cute, like the old Tess Holliday. Shauna from Chubby Cartwheels. That was one of the first clothing. Domino Dollhouse and Chubby Cartwheels were the first independent clothing lines by fat women for fat people.
Fuck yeah.
That I'm like, oh, this is awesome. And they had such cute shit. And I'm like, okay. And then I started riding my bike and doing a fashion bike blog for a little bit.
Cool.
I did Curvy Con and Full Figure Fashion Week. This was years ago. I don't do that shit no more because it's like, it's draining. That was like my first positive images of seeing fat women not being degraded, not being made fun of, not looking like shit, you know,
or being like being frumpy,
not looking like complete like fetish objects, you know. Also not just the typical BBW type of archetype of fat woman.
Then you get BBW as a category, big, beautiful women, in porn, and to a certain degree, modeling as well.
Yeah.
It's like you have to have a certain body type. You got to have big titties.
Got to have big titties, small waist, hips.
Yeah, yeah. And
be a little shorter.
Yeah. I mean, like, for example, like, I have never been considered BBW. I would be happy to be marketed or to market myself as thick. No. But, like, you know, I just don't have that exact body type. But then I'm also never going to be like petite.
Right.
You know,
and it's bullshit. It's like you all want to fit us into all these compartments. It's like, no, thanks. You know, also, like, you know, there's an acceptable fat person. You know, there's an acceptable amount of fat a person could have, or at least the shape a fat person should be.
Right.
You know, you have to have big boobs. You have to have a smaller waist or a flatter stomach than most. You have to have a big old butt with, like, wide hips. I knew I was never going to be that person. I'm more muscular built than that, and I'm also taller, which is fine. That's why I come up with Amazon, and it's worked for my benefit. You know, fuck you. You know, I'm soft and hard at the same time. Balance, people. Balance.
Oh, yeah. Balance. Oh, there soft it is again.
Yeah.
The you're both the silky ties and the heavy metal
heavy
bondage
shackles. Oh yeah buddy, chain you to the bed and then put a pretty bow on you. Nah, you're so pretty.
That also is a very gender fluid, gender queer sort of manifestation.
Yeah,
I love that.
I'm with it. But yeah, being a fat sex worker, bro, unlearning all those lessons taught growing up that I don't deserve to have someone who's into me. I don't deserve to have sex. I don't deserve to feel good. I remember even one fucking kid in high school. I was singing. I'm a big Sublime. I love Sublime. And I had the you know, good old CD players back in the day. So I was like switching up into Sublime. And I love that song, Date Rape. It's just hilarious. Because it reminded me of a teacher in that school. I swear to this day, I still think he was a piece of shit. Anyway, but this kid, and I was singing along to Date Rape. And he says, oh, that's the only way you're going to get laid.
Oof.
And it could have been in the context of I needed to rape somebody to have sex, or I needed to get raped to have sex. I wasn't sure. All I was like was, well, you know, I'll knock you out and leave you naked on the fucking floor without fucking you. Or, you know, like, I don't need to, like, knock someone out to fuck them. I'll just knock them out to knock them out. Well, you know, especially you. Fuck that noise. But I remember that being, especially as a teenager, and I was, like I said, I was an alternative person. I've always been into sexuality and human sexuality. I remember, so I'm Dominican and Puerto Rican. And as we can see, we got a lot of hair.
Hell yeah.
Most of my aunts and my cousins do hair, all right? Dominicans, we do hair because we have very specific hair. So we have to have salons dedicated to us. So my aunts having salons growing up would always have old Cosmos and like old Maxims. And I read both. I give a shit. I don't know which one I like more. I like looking at girls more, that's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, man. Maxim.
You remember that shit?
That was such a specific, like, I just remember the thing with Maxim was that they would get an actress that was, like, known for being, like, more pure or just, like, younger. And then,
slutting her up.
Slutting her up.
Yep.
And that was, like, it was so photoshopped and so just, like,
rape culture.
Well, just, like, like petite.
Yeah.
Everyone's so
It's the same
skinny.
Thing. Like generic hottie, regulation hottie, right? You know, to quote Mean Girls.
But even this idea of, like, oh, well, Maxim just had, you know, the girls that are attractive to everyone, or, you know, generic, or the, like, baseline of, you know, and it's like, no, actually, lots of different people are attracted to lots of different people, and, like, certain body types have become, like, a status symbol of, like, you should have someone who looks like this on your arm, but that might not actually even be the kind of person that you are attracted to, or and also you're allowed to be attracted to more than one kind of person. So I try to, like, interrupt this idea of, like, like, oh, well, people who are like empirically attractive, like as if there's like one kind of person that would be like hot to everyone. And that's just right. Like, it's just actually not how human desire works.
And it's all subjective, right? We're all into what exactly. We're into. And, you know, you're not into it. Okay. Someone else is into it. Okay. Who cares? Is it really affecting your life? It shouldn't. But let's not forget that all this misrepresentation comes from like fat phobia. You know,
of course.
Comes from a deep hate of fat people.
What's up with that?
Well, that comes from racism. That's racism in general. Yeah. Racism and the Fat Black Body. I'm misquoting that book, but it's a very good book. And it talks about, I forget her name, but she was brought to, I'm sure it was the East Side, and she was a black woman. You've seen her, the big over-exaggerated
Venus Hottentot.
Hottentot. Was that it? Black woman. She was basically put in a zoo.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah. She was an African woman.
African woman.
Who was basically treated like a freak show.
Like a freak show.
Because of her shape.
Because of her shape. Yeah, because she was very voluptuous and, you know, had junk in the trunk and was more cushion for the pushing, whatever you want to say, especially back then.
You're the best. Such a good producer.
You're the best.
Yeah, the Hottentot Venus.
Yeah, yeah.
Sarah Bartman.
Yep, that's the one. Thank you. Yeah, so a fear and over-sexualization of fat bodies comes from racism.
This is such an interesting dichotomy to fear and hatred of certain bodies, certain identities, and then the simultaneous exotification of those folks. So this like attraction, repulsion, they're both about control and an attempt at subjugation. People don't know how to express their desire for someone or a certain type of body or how to like or express something like about themselves. And so they exotify that person because then they feel like they can control that person and therefore control that desire, control, like have self-control. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I feel like that kind of is what even started like the slave trade, right? Like the Danes went to Africa. They saw strong, glistening, black, beautiful bodies, I'm sure, that did not look anything like theirs. A combination of attraction, sexual attraction probably, fear, made them want to control the entire group, race,
damn,
what have you.
Yeah, yeah. You're fucking right.
And it sucks.
It does. It sucks. Really fucking sucks.
It sucks. And that's very much part of like my work too.
Decolonizing
my root work, you know, going back to when I was doing my spirituality work, when I found yoga and brujeria and then Santeria, which is very prominent in my neck of the woods in the Caribbean, which came from Nigeria, West Africa, during the transatlantic slave trade. That's why Dominicans are black. Don't tell them. They don't like hearing that. You're black. We're black, but like, so growing up Latin, growing up Spanish, Hispanic. I'm not Spanish because I don't like to claim my Spaniard side. They were racist as fuck. They did a lot of shit too. It wasn't just the you know, England, Danes. It was very much the Spaniards too. Part of my work is by decolonizing those beauty standards. And
fuck yes.
My going back to my aunts who do hair, I straightened out my hair for so long as a child to fit into a mold, right? My father was very much against it. He's from DR originally. He came here when he was 13. He wanted me to be like bloop, 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 bloop. He didn't want me to tweeze my eyebrows. He's like, don't use tampons. You know, he just wanted me to be as natural as possible. And I think I understand why now more than ever, because our culture was so much, it was assimilated, like to the point of where we're not sure even if our lore is correct. Like, it's kind of like oral tradition and putting pieces of the puzzle together. And growing up, I know that the women in my family had to give them their whole identity up to be wives and mothers, to most of the times were shitty ass men who would cheat on them, beat them, starting to have other families, what have you, and on my mother and my father's side, you know. So I
oh
do.
Oh my God, you're weaving together so much right now.
It comes together.
Like, of like the entire history of colonialism and violence, and also hair, and also
culture,
and also parenthood, specifically like like birthing and nurturing, and what people are expected to give up and not take up space. I'm just like I'm in awe of everything
like
that
rambling.
You're weaving. No, you're not. No, you're weaving together everything we're talking about.
Great. Oh, thank you for keeping me on track. Sometimes I get off.
No, you're perfect.
Thank you,
No,
Beam.
This is the tangent show.
The tangent. I love it.
Because it's my show.
Yes. We'll go off on many tangents. Many. I do this work ultimately for my four mothers. Yeah. And that's only come to me recently in this year that I've really just, I've invested a lot of time and money and energy into myself. And it's become more and more clear that I was pushed into this spotlight, even though I didn't want it at first. Or
this
was very
exact
hesitant.
Spotlight.
This one right here. these two little ones right here. Instead of like fighting against it, I'm like, you know what? If I could make a difference in some sort of way, I'm going to. When I was a chubby cruiser, when I was a bicycle enthusiast, you know, I helped inspire a lot of people to like get up and try a bike or get up and get active and make themselves happy. And I love that. So I feel like going back to integrating my lives together, like if I was able to do that and reach out to somebody and they, you know, like a mother that feels like I could never do that, you know, sees me and is like, oh, maybe I can do that, you know, because I've been there.
See, you did it. You just wove it back into representation
trying.
Mattering.
It does. It does. I'm yelling at the mic like it's the mic's fault. But it matters. It fucking matters, man. And that's why I'm grateful for any opportunity to voice my, you know, my crazy mind. Show people, like, you know, you could be fat and ride a bike for miles.
Hell yeah.
For work to make money off of it. You could be a brown person and make your work about you and not about working for you and not working for someone else, because people of color are already automatically paid less. We're automatically already kind of like viewed as less. So if you could find something like that makes you matter, feel like you matter more and like you can make some sort of a difference, I say do it. I know it's, if it ruffles feathers, okay. Yeah. That means it's important work. Because we won't get far if we don't we're here now because we've ruffled many feathers. You know, you've done your thing that I could not possibly have thought of doing because of, you know, the time period of where I grew up, wherever. We're able to be that open. We're able to, like, integrate now a little bit more because of our four mothers, our four parents, our the ones who fought and ruffled those feathers before us, you know. Now we're here to continue to ruffle those feathers, maybe style them a little bit so they look pretty. Yes. All right, because I'm big on aesthetic. So, yeah, it's important to do that work. And that's why I'm here.
Holy fucking shit. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Maddox, please, anytime. I want to ask you about blackmail. Not to do a total like about face.
Yeah,
but I really want to do a like a brief.
Absolutely.
Why are people into that?
Yeah.
Why are people into blackmail? What's sexy about blackmail?
Oh man, what is it? Let's see. It's fear, you know?
Yeah.
Fear could be very
It's like a fear of exposure.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
The fear of like losing something.
The fear of being outed, you know?
Yeah.
The fear of being looked at differently.
Yeah.
The fear of being in control of somebody else. You're giving up all that control and your life is in somebody else's hands. That's a very big deal, you know? That's a very big deal to people, especially people who like psychodrama and fear play blackmail, things like that, which I love so much. Because I love threatening people. I could talk shit all day, you know? Like, you know, send me those pictures. Hell yeah. Let me see. You could suck your own dick? Great. No, for real. Like, my latest one, it's great. He could suck his own dick. It's amazing. I find him on Night Flirt.
So. And so you're blackmailing
him. So I'm blackmailing him. He just sent me some videos. I'm like, okay, great. I do have somewhere to go right now. So maybe I'll video chat you while I'm with my friends. And you could show them, too. I mean, they're not going to believe me if I show them your pictures. So we might as well show them a live show. Oh, no, mistress, you can't possibly do that to me. Yes, I could possibly do that to you. We could definitely get this going. Why not? You hear them laughing in the background? And then I have a sound bite specifically of a bunch of doms, my dom friends, laughing so I could play it in like, on like, you know, so I could replay
trade
it.
Trade secrets.
Trade secrets, people. Audio bites.
You're a Foley artist.
Dude, and I've always actually been interested in that. It's a very interesting line of work. It is. I love movies too. It's fun.
Cool.
Mostly like, I mean, I said,
what are some things that people like to be blackmailed about besides being able to, for those among us who can't suck our own dicks?
Right. I mean, I've been trying for years, but I just can't. Yeah, I just can't. I can't seem to get there, says Belly.
Never change.
Never change. I mean, it will never change. God.
What are some common things that people are like, I can't have this exposed?
So, like,
I'll give you whatever you want, like, just not anything but not the briar patch, right?
So, yeah. People who like to get shitted on.
Oh, yeah.
Toilets don't want to be exposed as being disgusting, dirty-ass toilets. Because, I mean, if you're a shit eater, I doubt you want people to know you're a shit eater. In general, this is a general overgeneralization, probably.
And yet they keep calling.
And they keep wanting me to send them pictures, you know, like, anyway. So that's definitely one that people love being blackmailed over. Another is being cissified.
Sure.
I feel like this comes from a closeted place, though, so that's a shameful place. I try not to do cissification and feminization with the context of shame, you know, involved. Like, that's just not my thing. I'm very queer, and I don't think dressing pretty should make you feel, you know.
100%. I mean, it's so interesting even that the first two things that you mentioned are, like, something, like, empirically, I mean, maybe not empirically disgusting, but like, you know, like, definitely like whole, like, unsafe, like, you know, repulsive, like, eating shit.
Hardcore.
And then you're like, and then putting on a dress, it's a little, those things
different
would be
spectrum.
Like equally shameful, and that someone would, like, you know, empty out their bank account rather than be exposed as a shit eater or someone who likes to wear lipstick. It's like really a sign of what a misogynistic society we live in.
Absolutely. And how, I guess, close-minded also, like, people could be, right? I mean, like,
well, if people have been indoctrinated with that, it can be hard to unlearn. And in the meantime, we might as well take their money.
Yeah. I mean, shit. What, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I look at it as reparations anyway, especially when it comes from non-POC people. Definitely. But yeah, I mean, it's because, you know, shit eaters, you obviously see why you wouldn't want to be blackmailed for that. And to a lesser extent, I guess, being seen in a dress, it kind of seems like one is, like, more extreme than the other. But shame is a powerful tool, people.
Yeah.
That's why the government uses it on us.
Yo.
That's why society likes to make us feel guilty about everything.
Yo.
Do your thing. But no, not like that. Not like that. That's society, you know?
But buy this thing and then...
But use it in this way, not the way you want to, but the way we intended for you to use it.
Sure.
Okay, guy.
Yeah.
I think people just like being blackmailed because of the fear and the giving up of control and the not knowing what's next. And like anticipation is really a big part of this.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Fear of the unknown also.
Fear of the unknown.
And it's like an ongoing psychodrama.
Yeah.
You could really draw it out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have like an ongoing texting thing with someone who I'm like, he said I reminded them of their old babysitter who used to like beat on them and like what have you.
I've heard that one before.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's very common.
Always a babysitter. I too remind people of their babysitter.
That's crazy, right? Yeah, yeah. It's the eternal like teenage like energy, I feel. Anyway, I feel like eternal youth. Right?
I love like a babysitter.
Listen. Sometimes like when my kid was little, so like, oh, is this your son? Yeah, I'm not the babysitter. This is my baby. He's attached to me. This is my baby. So this guy, this person I'm texting, we text back and forth, and we have this ongoing that I'm going to kidnap him.
Great.
If he doesn't continue, so he's doing anal training, right? So if Great. He doesn't continue to, in between his dates, keep things in his ass, mm-hmm. that I'm going to drive over to his house with a bunch of my people and put him in the trunk of my car, and I have his work address.
Great.
And then drive him all the way to his work, bound, tied, plugged up to the brim, and drop him right in front of the, like, and just wait till morning. Oh, yeah, because it's going to be in the middle of the night. It's not going to be during the day. It's going to be in the middle of the night when facilities are closed.
So if he survives the night.
If he survives the night,
yeah.
then everyone gets to walk in and see their coworker bound, gagged, tied, plugged, and probably some shit written on him. Like, I'm a fucking slut. Use all my holes. You know, like.
You know, the basics.
The basic stuff. Yeah.
Well, listen, if he ever fails to fulfill his duties, and mm-hmm. you need some help, mm-hmm. I'm
ring a ding ding.
Yeah, yeah. I can drive. I'm a good awesome. Van driver.
Great.
Yeah.
I need you to peel off as fast as possible.
I can do that. I know exactly how to the Great. Angle to make it peel. Yeah. Great. Been awesome. Practicing.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep practicing. Your day will come, babe.
Yes.
Yes. We will kidnap some dirty perv.
Sooner or later, somebody is gonna fail.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that's gonna be my time to shine.
Fun. Yeah. Yeah.
Fuck yeah. Oh my God. I want to learn so much more about blackmail, but we have been talking for an hour and I want to give time for questions. Does anybody have any questions about blackmail or parenthood or fatties
or
just like literal vibrators, literally anything, comic books,
things
anything at all?
Gag people with, I mean.
Yeah, what a great question. So the question is, like, is it always, are your blackmail scenes always about the threat and the fantasy, kind of like dirty talking about all of the awful things that you could do? But some of these are things that you definitely could plausibly do. Yeah. As we have established, I will drive this getaway van.
Yeah.
So you could.
We could make it happen.
You could make it happen. Yeah. Have you ever made it happen?
So far in terms of like a planned like this, not yet. I am working up to that. But things like regular threats to my subs, like I'm going to stomp the shit out of your balls whenever our next session is. And then like some time will go by and then I will definitely stomp the shit out of their balls, you know, like, so it like, it depends on, you know, so like these long elaborate ones, when it comes to like psychodrama, the more drawn out it is, the better,
right,
for the people. They
building
want
tension
the
and
building
suspense.
Of the tension and words, you know, the exchange of words, you know, what you say is very important, you know, how you say it. But I definitely want to, like, I'm really hoping I want to that we just kidnap this motherfucker. It'll be great. It'll be so good.
I can't, personally, I can't wait.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. So the question is, do we have advice about not only coming out, but what it means to have to keep coming out about so many different identities, be it being queer in a new, fresh way that you didn't realize before, being a sex worker, being
fresh
queers, you know, and then and maybe that things change, like you become a parent, and then you're coming, you know, you're coming out to different, you have these intersecting identities, and you're like coming out to your kink community about being a parent, coming out to your parent community about being kinky, coming out to your sex work community about being a parent, like all of these different things. So like, what's our advice? Do you want to go first?
Oh God. Sure. Yes. Bravery. You know, it takes being, you know, being brave. Also takes a level of not giving a fuck, because there's always going to be somebody that says something.
That's true.
There's always going to be somebody that has something negative to say. And it's hard to not focus on that, but you're going to have to. The Three of Cups tarot card comes to mind.
Yes.
Because, you know, on that tarot card, the person's looking down. There's two cups in front of them spilled. They're, like, very upset about it. But behind them, there are three full cups, right? Mm. In the same sense, like, yeah, there's going to be people who are going to be like, you're a horrible person, you're a shitty parent. But there's also gonna be people like, you're brave, I see you, I stand by you. So really count, those count for more, definitely.
That's beautiful advice.
Oh, thank
you. I literally just thought about something that was upsetting me yesterday and realized that I should think differently about it because you just, I feel like you just pulled a tarot card for me without there actually being a deck here.
Ah, bruja like pussy.
Oh my God.
Bruja
thank
pussy.
You. Thank you, bruja.
Got you, babe, any day.
Now I want a full reading.
Oh shit. Well, I don't do that.
Oh, but you don't?
I know people who do.
Okay.
That, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Hook me up.
I got you.
And you can like, you can watch because you're a voyeur.
I am a voyeur. I like watching. Yeah. You got to be brave. And at some point you got to be like, fuck people, fuck what they're going to say, you know, because again, they're always going to say something. And because you're going to get sick and tired of not living your truth at some point, you're going to feel like I'm just going through the motions. I'm waking up and going to sleep, waking up, going to sleep. So if you think about it a lot and if you feel like it's calling you, then it's probably calling you. And regardless of the kickback, you should go for it because more often than not, you'll feel better. Good things will come from it. And I'm not just talking about like monetary and material things. I'm talking about like your sense of self worth, your image, you know, maybe even the work that you're doing for others, you know? Yeah. What about you, babe?
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah.
The thing that comes to mind for me is that I think that coming out is really important. The discourse around coming out for queer folks has been very important. And I think there's been also an important sort of counter narrative of like the fact that it's easier for some people to be out and to come out than others and putting pressure on people to be like, you're not, you know, you're like betraying your queerness or your queer community by not coming out. Like for some people, it's like truly like literally unsafe to be out and especially in certain environments. And so when it comes to all of the different things that I could be out about in different environments, something that is like a guiding light for me or that helps me to access my bravery is thinking about my intersecting privilege and thinking about how, like, for example, like I have a great deal of privilege as a white person and as somebody who has degrees that give me social mobility and class mobility, even though I am definitely working class but then I'm a woman and that gives me like less gender privilege and I'm queer and that gives me less privilege, but I also like have more passing privilege as a queer person than a lot of other queer folks.
Yeah.
For a lot of different reasons. And so like I try to be out wherever I can about being a sex worker and try to figure out how to sort of position myself as like, is this a situation where it's appropriate for me to say I'm a retired sex worker or a former sex worker, which is like never going to be true. Mm-hmm. Like I'm just always going to yeah. keep doing it. And also like there is a like pornographic image of me grinding away on the internet, which is forever, forever. So, you know, there's like a certain point at which like being a retired sex worker is like, well, that stigma is still going to like potentially affect me forever. So anyway, my point is that like it's a way that I try to leverage my privilege and use my privilege to be out when I can to try to make the world safer in whatever incremental ways I can for people who share some of my identities but have less privilege than me in other identities. So that's my advice when I'm feeling like I don't really want to tell this person that I'm at like a potential job interview for that they can Google me and see my pussy getting electrocuted like right now. That makes me uncomfortable, but it's like, well, yeah, there's like a lot of other sex workers who like would definitely not be able to get this job or make this money or like have this access because of like because they're POC or because they don't have the gender and queer passing privilege that I do. And so that helps me to be brave, and that also feels like a better use of privilege than like to just like walk around with like white guilt all the time. I'm not like looking to like assuage my guilt. I'm looking to like use privilege as fuel to do the right thing whenever I can.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Thanks.
Yeah. No, thank you for doing that.
Oh,
you know?
Well, thanks for validating
work.
Me.
There's work that, you know, from both sides. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's best when we work together.
That's right. Unity.
So the question is, you know, Maddox talked about having, you know, having the great experience of having a pro-dom friend and neighbor who lived below them when they were 18, who took them to their first play party. And so somebody is asking, you know, if I'm not lucky enough to have that like cool, you know, mama dom to turn me out. What are some ways like right now in 2019, that's about to be 2020, you know, in New York City or elsewhere, that I can start like exploring or experimenting or putting myself out there. First of all, Pleasure Chest is a really great community center, and coming to, you know, I'm biased obviously, but like coming to Wire People Into That Live and coming to the workshops here, which speaking of class are always free. And then you get discounts on sex toys, which is really great. I also would love to plug Kink Out, which is a really amazing queer inclusive, sex work inclusive, POC centering, slut centering, and leather focused, which meaning like BDSM and kink, like culture and history and community. So Kink Out produces events, but then also like all of their social media, they like uplift other intersecting communities. So they're like always posting about the cool shit, and they're like great. And they're doing art installations so now.
MoMA,
In MoMA and Leslie Lohman. So there's also more.
I just went there. It was great.
To the Leslie Lohman. Yeah, totally. So same. Great. They're doing exactly what you're asking for, which is building more of those spaces. And the thing that is really great that I'll say about Kink Out is that they definitely are facilitating spaces where there are kinky and sexy things happening, but they're also facilitating community conversation. They're also facilitating art. They're also facilitating education, all sort of centered around community, joy, and pleasure. So there are like sex parties that I could tell you about, and like play parties, like legendary play parties that I could tell you about. And going to those is really fun, but sometimes that's like
overwhelming,
a bit overwhelming. And maybe like part of what you want is to like have those sexy experiences or like meet people to have those sexy experiences with, but maybe also part of what you want to do is build community and create culture. And I think that that is something that Kink Out is really foregrounding. So that would be my recommendation. And I wish I could list other folks like them, but I think that the thing that's really amazing about what they're doing is that it's very singular and unique. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Definitely with Kink Out. They're a great organization. So girl, I'll go to a party with you if you want. That's fine. I mean,
you're the neighbor.
Yeah.
Now.
I'll give you the neighbor. I won't charge you. Oh, okay. I don't really. Yeah, so I don't really charge females and femmes. But sliding scale for queer, femme, trans, disabled people of color. If you're white, cisgendered, you're paying full price, basically. That's all I'm saying. Don't worry about it. Yes, as you should be. So if you want to go to a party, we could definitely exchange information in terms of...
Oh my God, you're like a doula.
I mean... But the baby's already born, right? So, you know. So I'm going to name a couple of things off the top of my head. Goddess Loft. I did mention Goddess Loft. They're a good space to not only rent out of if you're a pro, but they also have curated parties, a couple parties in the month. There's one tomorrow, Intro to Anal and Pegging, which I'm trying to make. So, hey. Oh, yeah, I love butt stuff. So, like.
Same note.
Yeah, man. Here. Lady Euphoria is always hosting workshops. She's the best, educational wise. Lola Jean is also, she also hosts a bunch of things. Bedlam is a pretty good party. You pay $25. It's open, so it's not like you have to get vetted or an invite only. So it's a really good like party to go in, see the setup, see who runs it, see what people are doing.
Submit
if you feel like it. You know, their fourth anniversary is their 21st. That's the next party. May be there. So VOW has a party coming up next Sunday.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so that's gonna be a lot of fun. It's also a fundraiser. Yay. Yeah, that's all good thing. We'll talk.
It's a good place to start.
Yeah, yeah. Also, yeah.
As always, I want to give a shout out to my loyal live sound engineer, Ben Weber. Everybody give it up for Ben.
Yeah, Ben. He's the man.
As always, I want to thank the Pleasure Chest for hosting, especially Ryan and Bahar. And of course, my guest, Maddox. Everybody give it up for Maddox.
Thank you. Oh my God. Thank you.
So where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, where can't you find me? let's see. Instagram, Bruja Pussy, is my more personal family regular shit. Amazon Maddox is my work one. I post slightly different there. I'm on FetLife, Amazon Maddox. Twitter, Amazon Maddox. Oh, God, what else? I'm on OnlyFans, $5 a month.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, for until the new year. Then I'm going to start upping those prices because a lot more perverted stuff is going on there.
Oh, great.
So that should be fun.
I need to start an OnlyFans.
Yeah, you should, babe. We got to get you on there. We got to make some stuff.
Okay, well, great. It's all happening.
Yeah, buddy. What else? Where else the fuck am I?
That's a good place to start.
It's a good place to start. If you don't have time, funds, whatever, to like possibly have a live in-person session with me, I do phone and text sessions, video sessions.
Awesome.
Through Night Flirt, Sex Panther, but also just like, I'm always working around people.
Just hit them up.
Yeah, just hit me up.
You can also find Maddox on the back cover of
There I am.
Of Safe Sex, my new science fiction comic book. Maddox was one of the awesome models for the Dirty Mind collection,
so
which
many
is
babes.
The like exclusive merch line that I did with Jack the Stripper, and
available till the 31st, right?
Only till, yeah, so do your shopping now.
Then it goes back in the vault and it never comes back out.
Maybe for special occasions.
Maybe. But yeah, very thank you so much for having me be part
of
that.
Oh my God, thank you. You looked amazing.
I was so happy to be
here. And people are always surprised it's you because you wore that like crazy Bane mask.
Yeah, I didn't, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. It was like $25 because it was missing a piece of hardware at Purple Passion. I'm like, but it doesn't look like it's missing anything. Give me the fucking mask.
Oh my God.
Now try
bargain,
and kiss me.
Bargain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Oh.
I want a spike bra. Come on, everybody. Try to hug me now.
Go ahead. You know oh, you go down it. To St. Mark's and find that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, but that's it, right?
Yeah, I think so. As always, you can subscribe to Why Are People Into That wherever you pod. Follow me at Tina Horns Ass on Twitter and Instagram. Please support the decriminalization of sex work wherever you can. And do what you can to destigmatize whores, sluts, perverts, and queers.
Yes.
And now everybody go enjoy your 15% off shopping. Yeah. The store is open till 10. We'll see you next time.
All right.
So fucking brilliant
you
and amazing.
You are fucking brilliant and amazing.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.